And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick A ESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great show for you today. Obviously going to be catching up on news and breaches, but I'm really excited for this deep dive. This was a really, really fun segment. And this actually comes from an interview I did a couple of weeks ago. Now, you may know this person from his YouTube channel that is wildly popular. He has something like 5 million followers, and most of his videos have over a million views. And he is basically a car guru. He knows automobiles like nobody else. And his name is Doug DeMuro. He is such a fun interview. We had a great time, but I wanted to talk about car privacy, car technology, all those kinds of things. It's something I've really been interested in since essentially the Tiger Woods crash, which we will get into. Not that I follow golf or anything, but Tiger Woods basically said that he didn't remember anything about his crash, but his car did. It recorded everything. And so I wanted to talk about that, not just from the cool tech implications, but the privacy implications as well. And so Doug was a great, great sport. He knows a ton of stuff. So sit back and enjoy that. And as always, let's start with the news. And in robot news, robots are now getting legal rights. And I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords. Now, here's what's going on. As small robots proliferate on sidewalks and city streets, so does legislation that grants them the generous access and even classifies them, in the case of the state of Pennsylvania, as pedestrians. Now, here's why this matters. Fear of a dystopian urban world where people dodge heavy, fast-moving droids is colliding with the aims of robot developers, both large and small, including Amazon and FedEx, to deploy delivery fleets. Now, according to Greg Lynn, CEO of robot maker Piaggio Fast Forward, and I quote, "The sidewalk is the new hot debated space that the aerial drones were maybe 3 or 5 years ago. There's also a lot of people trying to deploy robots on bike lanes, obviously where the robots would be able to go faster. Now, states like Pennsylvania, Virginia, Idaho, Florida, and Wisconsin have passed what are considered to be rather liberal rules permitting robots to operate on sidewalks, which is prompting pushback from cities like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that fear mishaps. Now, in Pennsylvania, robot quote-unquote pedestrians can weigh up to 550 pounds and essentially travel at up to 12 miles an hour. Now, according to the Pittsburgh City paper, and I quote, "Opposition has largely come from pedestrian and accessibility advocates, as well as labor unions like the Teamsters." Now, the laws obviously are a boon to Amazon's Scout delivery robot and FedEx's Roxo fleets, which are being tested in urban and suburban settings right now as I'm talking to you here. And according to an article in Wired, and I quote, "Backers say the laws will usher in a future where household items show up in a matter of hours with fewer idling delivery vans blocking traffic and spewing emissions." Now, the other side of this argument is that some technology evangelists think that these laws are pretty much a bad idea. The National Association of City Transportation Officials, also known as the NACO or NACTO, says that robots, quote, "should be severely restricted, if not banned outright. Uncoordinated autonomous delivery services could flood sidewalks with bots, making walking increasingly difficult and unpleasant." They also added, and I quote, "drone delivery could significantly increase noise pollution and add a new dimension of chaos to urban streets." Now, San Francisco did actually ban sidewalk robots in 2017, but made at least one exception, which was for the test of a Postmates bot called Serve. And I think this is actually going to be really interesting. And I should say, the main article I'm quoting here is from Axios, which I think did a really good job on this. And it is, I think, the future of what we are looking at here. We are becoming, I think, much less of a pedestrian society unless you're in a direct urban area. Like, you know, for me, it'd be if I'm walking through downtown Chicago, it's obviously much easier for me to walk. But when you're out in the suburbs or rural, I think it's much less of a problem. But I think we're going to see quite a lot as we see drones fly around. We're going to start seeing robots pretty much going everywhere where they're following their owners or they're making deliveries, which is probably what the Teamsters has a problem with. This is coming. And it's going to be very curious to see what our cities look like in the next 5 to 10 years as we all start to adopt this and, you know, become basically friends with our robot overlords. So we'll see where this goes. But that is your robot legal news, I guess, of the week. And before we head over to the next segment, I wanted to let you know, and I've done this in a couple of shows, and I keep being reminded to do this, and I always forget. Basically, if you didn't know, I put out content on a daily basis, not just here on the radio where you're listening to me, but actually I put it quite a lot of places, daily podcasts and videos on some of the latest trends, technology, cybersecurity, privacy, all these kinds of things I keep day to day. And some of the segments that I do for my news section or even my breaches of the week every Sunday gets translated into this show. But I do this as essentially a labor of love. You know, I don't have any kind of monetization anywhere. I just do it to keep people informed and to keep everybody interested. But you can find me basically on Twitter or Facebook at @NickAESP or on LinkedIn and YouTube at @NickEspinoza. And please follow me. I'd love to hear, I'd love to basically get a shout out from you and you know, send me a message or whatever it is. But I do content daily, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at @NickAESP. Again, that's @NickAESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And the last couple of weeks and breaches has just been absolutely off the rails. No joke. If you might recall, I do a weekly breaches of the week video. And this is a condensing of that 2 weeks into one hour show. And obviously, I've got to pick and choose some of the most interesting breaches for the last couple of weeks. But 1 week literally clocked in at about 40 minutes worth of me just sitting there talking about data breaches. It's the longest one I've ever done. And so I had a ton of help. And with that, I'd like to thank the following people that sent me these breaches and information over the last couple of weeks on top of my own research. And that is Richard Reefer, Ronald Ash, Jen Viaumaster, Duke Ironstone, David Walker, Jason Dance, Jacqueline Wolf, Chris Fallon, Dr. Christopher Gay, and Barrett Peterson. To all of you, thank you so, so much. It helps me out tremendously because these keep getting longer. And with that, let's dive right in and talk about both the University of Maryland and the University of California, because on March 29th, threat actors began publishing screenshots of data allegedly stolen from both of those universities. Now, these screenshots included records that allegedly belonged to the University of Maryland at Baltimore, and they show federal tax documents, requests for tuition remission paperwork, and an application for the Board of Nursing, not to mention passports, tax summary documents, and on and on. The leaked data snapshots expose sensitive information, including home addresses, social security numbers, immigration status, dates of birth, passport numbers, and on and on. Now, the University of California at Merced also appears to basically have been hit as well, and their screenshots basically include a list of individuals, their social security numbers, retirement documentation, and 2019-2020 benefit adjustment requests. And in addition, the leaked data appears to include late enrollment benefit application forms for employees at UC Path Blue Shield Health Savings. So they got in deep. So heads up to anybody in regards to the University of Maryland or the University of California. And with that, let's give you guys an update on the SolarWinds data breach that's been evolving and has been a complete disaster since December of last year. And the reason why we're talking about this is because current and former administration sources say that nation-state attackers were actually able to read the Department of Homeland Security Secretary's email, among others. That's right, the head of Homeland Security had his email read. Now, the SolarWinds cyber attackers compromised the head of the Department of Homeland Security under former President Trump and other top-ranking members of the department's cybersecurity staff, according to the report. The Associated Press reported that as part of the federal government's infiltration, the attackers were able to access the email accounts of then-acting Secretary Chad Wolf, and his staff, according to anonymous government sources. Now, in the wake of the discovery of this just insane operation, DHS officials, including Secretary Wolf, switched to using new mobile phones with Signal, which is an encrypted messaging app I highly recommend for everybody, in order to communicate. One DHS spokesperson, Sarah Peck, told the AP that, quote, a small number of employees' accounts were targeted in the breach, and that the agency, quote, no longer sees indicators of compromise on our networks. It's unclear whether this information in the emails was of a classified nature, and we also now have learned that both the FAA, that's the Federal Aviation Administration, they run the airports and the airplanes and the flight paths, and the Department of Energy, they run our nuclear power plants and everything else, were also basically hit as well. And that person that was talking to the AP noted that the FAA struggles with outdated and legacy software, which basically means they're not 100% sure how deep and how vast this was. This is going to be a mess, because imagine getting into the air traffic control system and deciding to route planes where the air traffic controllers see one thing, but the planes are physically somewhere else and crashing into each other. That's what we're talking about here. Not to mention the Department of Energy, because they told according to the AP's investigation, they revealed that adversaries were able to access top officials' schedules, including then Secretary Dan Brulette, who obviously that was under the Trump administration. And it should also be noted that the schedules were not confidential. However, the Department of Energy spokesperson said that it has, quote, found no evidence the network maintains senior officials' schedules was compromised, meaning the network itself was not compromised, but we will see, because God forbid they're able to melt down a power plant. Now, with that, let's move on and talk about Broward County schools in Florida. Attackers were able to basically breach their computer system earlier this month and threaten to release sensitive information, including students' and teachers' personal data, unless the district paid, get this, $40 million. Now, from what I understand, Broward County is a rather affluent area, but $40 million for a ransom, that is crazy. Moving on, let's talk about Accelion. This is going to be an update. If you recall, this is the file transfer company that tons of major organizations were using. Stanford Medicine is now declaring an data breach thanks to Accelion. And what they're saying was exposed was social security numbers, addresses, emails, family members, and financial information. And they basically compromised the file system. And so here we are. So if you have anything to do with Stanford Medicine, you were caught up in this. Moving on, let's head on over to Canada and talk about basically their massive retailer with over 1,000 stores called Home Hardware. They got hit with ransomware. And so basically that knocked out some of their infrastructure, but they said, and I quote, we immediately engaged our cybersecurity firm and quickly implemented countermeasures to isolate and contain the attack. We have maintained full business continuity. Each of the stores are independently owned and operated. Based on our investigation, it appears the attack has not impacted dealer retail systems or any consumer transaction or payment data. In other words, if you're shopping at Home Hardware up in Canada, your credit card hopefully is okay, because again, they have 1,000 stores, so we'll see where this goes, but heads up, Home Hardware shoppers. Moving on, let's talk about Facebook again, because they always have some kind of data breach going on. But a couple of weeks ago, a user in a low-level hacking forum published phone numbers and personal data of hundreds of millions of Facebook users for free. We are talking about over 533 million Facebook users from 106 countries, including 32 million here in the US, 11 million in the UK, 6 million in India, and on and on. Now, this also includes, this information that it includes, rather, is phone numbers, Facebook IDs, full names, locations, birth dates, the bio, and in some cases, email addresses. Now, Business Insider reviewed a sample of this leaked data and verified several records by matching known Facebook users' phone numbers with the IDs listed in the data set. They also verified records by testing email addresses from the data set and Facebook's password reset feature, which can be used to partially reveal a user's phone number. So obviously that's a huge problem. Now, a Facebook spokesperson told Business Insider that the data had been scraped because of a vulnerability that the company had patched in 2019. Now, here's the thing, and what has come to light since this data breach is that they have known for years prior to 2019 that this feature on their website essentially had multiple different bugs where essentially anybody could come and glean this kind of information. They didn't actually fix this entire system. And so by virtue of that, Facebook is basically saying, well, I mean, we knew about it in 2019 and we plugged the hole, but oh well. So there you go. Facebook doesn't care about you. They only care about money. You can take that to the bank. Please feel free to quote me on that. Moving on. Let's talk about emissions testing company A-Plus Technologies here in the United States. Essentially, if you have a car and it needs to get emission tested, you're probably going to them if you're in one of these states. On Tuesday, March 30th, a malware attack basically knocked them out in eight states, including Connecticut, Georgia, Idaho, Massachusetts, Utah, and Wisconsin. And as of a few days ago, they still cannot provide a time frame for when they will restore service. And so hopefully, as I'm sitting here talking to you, they are back online. But heads up, your emission testing may have to be delayed if you are in one of those states. Moving on, let's talk about booking.com. Now, this is a major hotel booking site, and they just got fined 475,000 euros or 558,000 after failing to report a serious data breach within the time period mandated by the GDPR or General Data Protection Regulation in the European Union. Booking.com suffered a breach in 2018 when telephone scammers targeted 40 employees at various hotels in the United Arab Emirates or UAE. So heads up to you. If you've used Booking.com, you may have been caught up in that. Moving on, let's talk about the New York Foundling Organization, which provides many service-related services for things like child protection, foster care and adoption, disability services, and more. An unsecured database sitting in a Microsoft blob appears to belong to one of the largest charities in New York, which is the New York Foundling. This unsecured database contained more than 2,000 comma-separated values files and text files, each with hundreds of thousands of entries related to patients' medical records, children's legal guardians, caseworkers, doctors, and other child welfare specialists. And as of March 31st, the New York Foundling Organization had not confirmed that the database was actually theirs, but researchers traced it back to them. So hopefully that will go nowhere. Moving on, let's talk about Wyden and Kennedy. This is out of Portland, Oregon. They're an ad agency. Now, W&K or W plus K gives its employee benefits information to a Portland-based accounting firm called Perkins & Co., which in turn stores that data on servers owned by a vendor called NetGain. And guess who got ransomed? NetGain, got ransomware. Now, none of the companies know for certain whether the employee data was compromised in the attack, but nevertheless, NetGain is going through a ransomware hit, and so Wyden and Kennedy out of Portland may be the first of many we see go ahead and declare breaches. Moving on, let's talk about MedData. They provide revenue cycle services to healthcare systems and hospitals, including Medicaid eligibility, third-party liability, workers' compensation, and patient billing services. And you know where I'm going with this, because the patient data from multiple providers appears to have been captured and subsequently linked on a data repository known as GitHub Arctic Code Vault by a third-party vendor, which would be MedData. Now, the hospitals that have now had to declare breaches are Memorial Hermann Hospital, King's Daughters Health System, OSF Healthcare, Aspirus, and the University of Chicago Medicine. So that is crazy. Hopefully they will get that hole plugged, but I'm sure we will see more hospitals have to declare HIPAA breaches. Moving on. Let's talk about another supply chain attack, and that would be PCS Revenue Control Systems. They work with school districts, so this should be great, and they sent letters to parents stating that the company in December of 2019, so over a year ago, detected an unauthorized access to files and records of school meal programs that it manages. So PCS said in a statement that the breach potentially exposed students' names, IDs, dates of birth, and social security numbers. Now, while PCS said it found no evidence the information was misused, that's what they always say, they are now going to provide credit monitoring services, which they are supposed to do. The company also said that it conducted a review of its system to see whether security should be tightened. I would hope so. A PCS customer relation representative said its investigation is active, but declined to basically say how many students have been affected. But the following school districts have declared data breaches. So if you have a child in this school district, heads up to you. DeKalb County School District in Georgia, Polk County, Florida, Austin ISD in Austin, Texas, Alachua County Schools in Florida, and Pelham City Schools in Alabama. So heads up to you. It seems like most of them are south of the Mason-Dixon line. I have no idea how big PCS is, but that obviously is going to affect tens of thousands, if not millions of children. Moving on, let's talk about Brown University. Basically, they're a private research university, if you didn't know, and they had to disable their systems and actually cut connections to their data center after suffering a cyber attack about a week or so ago. Now, this Ivy League school's IT staff said the attack focused on the Windows-based devices, meaning if you were running Microsoft Windows, and so they temporarily asked faculty to switch to computers running other operating systems like MacBooks, or use your smartphone like your iPhone or your Android or tablets and all of that. The university's computing and information services staff, quote, took a number of aggressive steps to protect the university's digital resources, including shutting down connections to our central data center and systems within it. There are no details shared on what exactly happened, but it is looking like malware, possibly ransomware. So heads up, Brown University. Hopefully you'll get back on your feet. Moving on. Let's talk about LinkedIn, because the personal data of more than 500 million LinkedIn users has been posted for sale online, and yet another incident of threat actors scraping data from public profiles and then selling it online for potential misuse and obviously profit. Just like Facebook, here we go. Now, the attackers posted an archive containing the data that included LinkedIn IDs, full names, professional titles, email addresses, phone numbers, and other personally identifiable information on a popular hacker forum, according to a report in Cyber News about a week ago Tuesday. Now, the LinkedIn incident obviously comes on the heels of 533 million Facebook users that got hit about a week before or so, so that is obviously crazy. LinkedIn is one of my most prolific social media platforms, given that, obviously this show, while it's about cybersecurity, also relates in business, so that's crazy. And if you're on LinkedIn, heads up, you and I were probably hit together. Moving on, let's talk about credit cards from the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, China, Singapore, France, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, and Mexico. And the reason why we are talking about credit cards from those countries is because researchers at the company Group IB said about a week ago or so that in their blog that user data from the Swarm Shop card shop, this is basically a place in the dark web that trades in stolen personal payment records, was leaked online on March 17th, and posted on a different underground forum that contained 12,344 records of the card shop administrators, sellers, and buyers. So in other words, essentially the criminal hackers got doxxed, 12,344 of them. But the leaked data also included the victims of this, which had this following information: their nickname, hashed passwords, contact details, history of activity, and current balance. The database also exposed all compromised data traded on the website, which included 623,036 payment cards issued by banks from, once again, the United States, Canada, the UK, China, Singapore, France, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, and Mexico. There were also 498 sets of online banking credentials and 69,592 sets of U.S. Social Security numbers and Canadian social insurance numbers. So obviously, that's a huge problem. Heads up to you. You might want to check your credit score and your bank statements. Moving on, let's talk about the American Society for Clinical Pathology, based out of Chicago. They disclosed a payment card incident that impacted customers who entered payment info on their websites. Now, this member list basically includes over 100,000 medical laboratory professionals, clinical and anatomic pathologists, residents, and students. So we are talking about basically the medical profession. Now, on March 11th of this year, they discovered that the attackers might have had access to customers' payment card information, including names, credit card or debit card numbers, card expiration dates, and CVV. That's the 3 or 4 digit code on the front or back of your card. Front 4 digit if you're Amex, 3 on the back for pretty much everybody else. So heads up to you, if you are a member of the American Society for Clinical Pathology, you might want to check in. Moving on, let's talk about OnlyFans, and I will get to exactly what they do if you've never heard of them, but here we go. After a shared Google Drive was posted online containing the private videos and images from hundreds of OnlyFans accounts, a researcher has created a tool allowing content creators to check if they are part of this leak. Now, it is common for people to share OnlyFans content they subscribe to, but what stands out about this leak is the large amount of creators whose private content had been shared all at once. Obviously, that looks like malfeasance. Now, OnlyFans, as I mentioned, I'll tell you about it, is a website that allows content creators to earn money by sharing things like images, videos, and live streams with fans who pay to subscribe to their content. Now, while OnlyFans is promoted as a way for celebrities and social influencers to share their content, it is basically very heavily and primarily used for adult-themed content, basically for fans who will pay for access to that. So heads up to you. If you didn't know what OnlyFans is, there's a whole bunch of adult-themed private content that got out. And finally, and we have two finalies for you this week, because I think these two are really interesting. If you didn't know, just recently, the Pwn to Own competition, basically Pwn to Own 2021, came and went, and it is fascinating. If you don't know what this is, it's basically people like me that get together, and we all have competitions where we try to hack into things, and if we are able to successfully find vulnerabilities and exploits in common products, then we basically get points, but we also get money. And we get a lot of it. Now, here's the thing. The first day, during the first day of Pwn to Own 2021, I want to talk about just this day because contestants won $440,000 after successfully exploiting previously unknown vulnerabilities to hack Microsoft Windows 10, Microsoft's Exchange email server, which has been in the news, and I've talked about this extensively on Breaches, basically getting just tons and thousands of companies data breached, and Microsoft Teams. Yes, three core Microsoft products, Windows 10, Microsoft Exchange email, and Microsoft Teams, which you might use at work, have all basically unknown vulnerabilities have now been found. And this is a huge problem. Now, the first one basically to fall was Microsoft Exchange in the server category after the DevCore team achieved what's called a remote code execution on the Exchange server, and that basically won them $200,000 and 20 Master of Pwn points. And I'm telling you right now, if you got kids, get them into cybersecurity because, believe me, there is money there. Now, the next one to go out was a cybersecurity researcher that successfully obtained code execution on Microsoft Teams. And basically, again, there are different categories. And this one was the enterprise communications category. And he combined two separate security bugs that he found and was able to get into Microsoft Teams. And he earned $200,000 as well and 20 Master of Pwn points.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.